When it comes to COVID-19, one thing is abundantly clear, that during these past little over 4 years now, many in our government, media, and the medical community lied to us. They lied with a seared conscience. The world paid a great price, and now they want us to forget?
This is Truth to Ponder with Bob Bierman.
I've mentioned this a few times over the past several weeks, that this radio program was birthed because so much of the information being pushed out by the supposedly trusted sources often made very little sense. Some of it contradicting known science. And there seemed to be an agenda behind everything related to COVID-19. Governments used the pandemic to force people to stay home, online learning that just destroyed children. And yet so many doctors, so many experts that really knew what was going on would say these steps you're taking are unnecessary. These things you're doing are unprecedented. And they would ask why. And those that pull the levers behind the scenes in the deep state of government, in the globalist system, they were demanding obedience and fear when it came to all things COVID. Here in the United States in particular, and the same is true in Canada, the United Kingdom, Europe, Australia, doesn't matter. Much of the mainstream corporately owned media, they fell into lockstep and would publish, disseminate, or put on the air whatever lie of the day the government demanded, particularly if it would achieve a political gain. How many of you remember having to stay home because you couldn't work? How many people lost a business? How many people's education was ruined? How many lost things like a home because they couldn't afford it when the money dried up? And yet these same individuals that demanded all this obedience without any scientific proof of any of it, none of it, zero, right down to the face diapers. Remember having to walk into places with a face diaper. Yet there is roughly 50 some odd studies, triple blind studies I might add, that have proved one thing we knew before, during, and now to this day. A face diaper does not stop you from getting a virus. Period. Nothing more to say. In fact, when you look at the studies, there's actually a slight increase in your possibility of coming down with COVID-19 if you had worn one. And yet they would keep pushing, walking one way in grocery stores. They would keep pushing wearing face diapers, staying 6 feet apart, staying at home. These idiotic expressions like quarantine, let's be safe. You were lied to. You were lied to big time. And you would think people that we elect, to be honest, would be. But even many of those honest people we elect became subjected to these unelected institutions that really are the government in most nations today. There is a deep state. There's one in the United States. There's one in Canada. There's one in Australia. There's one in the United Kingdom. There is one in all of Western Europe. A deep globalist state that demands your strictest obedience. I mentioned on a program this week, and I'll talk more about it on other days in the future, this new WHO treaty that they're trying to force onto the nations. Thankfully, many nations are seeing through this fraud. They want full authority in your country. If you're an American, they want full control here in the United States. Next time they declare, not we, next time they declare a pandemic, they want to run it, control it, telling who can stay home, who's essential, who's not, what the hospital protocols are. Can you go to school? Can you work? Can you go outdoors? They want to have full 100% unbridled control. Can you trust the WHO? I can't. They were one of the filthiest lying organizations on the planet during COVID. One of the worst. And I don't care if it was for political gain, monetary gain, power gain for elitism. I believe the World Health Organization needs to be defunded, shut down, and shunned forever, especially by the United States. Don't put another penny in it. Rip up any treaty they try to give you. And I don't think Biden, though he thinks he has any authority that he thinks he can have today, he really doesn't have the authority to sign off on this. We saw during COVID the death ticker here in the United States, especially on CNN and MSNBC. All during the time that Donald Trump ran for office and all the way until the inauguration of Joe Biden. And then magically, the day that Joe Biden became president at 12 noon on the 20th of January of 2021, the death ticker disappeared. Mission accomplished. We've got a reprobate and a fool and an Antichrist agent in the White House now. So we don't need the fear of death any longer. Let's pretend that he's fixing it. Joe Biden, he can't fix anything. He can wreck it, but he can't fix it. And so I look back over the litany of people that we had to endure and listen to. Part of my job in 2020, when I came out of retirement to go work again in emergency management, I had to listen to virtually every press conference, read up on all the data. It was a very long day, but something began to smell rotten way back in March. Increasingly so when you got into April, and by the time we got to basically 4 years right now, when I walked away and said, I'm done. I can't lie anymore. I'm finding too much truth. And then you find the Twitters of this world, the Googles of this world, the Facebooks of this world, the deep state of this world, the profiteers of this world are suppressing truth. If you were a world-recognized doctor in your field, but you disagreed with the political COVID narrative of the day or any of the insane protocols that were being pushed on the hospital, you could lose your medical license. You were shunned. You were deplatformed. You were made a non-person. The evil sycophants of COVID need to be held accountable. And see, now they know that the jig is up and the truth is beginning to leak out. Do the vaccines work? They lied about that. Remember, you were told if you take the vaccine, you'll never get COVID. Well, Bob, there were a couple of breakthrough cases, but that's not really the norm. And by the way, they're safe and effective, those vaccines. Well, maybe it's a little bit more than a breakthrough. Yeah, there are some people getting it, but at least you won't die as quick in the hospital, or you won't die at all, whatever the argument of the day was. And on this stupidity and silliness went. Till eventually it became apparent that this vaccine neither stopped you from getting or spreading COVID-19. It was totally worthless for its purpose. And yet other treatments we had known about for 20, 25 years, going back to other days, and even when COVID first hit this country in 2003 and 4, all those well-established ways of treating it were abandoned, and suddenly you were told they don't work, even though they had worked for decades. People like Rochelle Walensky at the CDC lied to you. Dr. Anthony the Fraud Cockroach Fauci lied to you. Many at MSNBC, CBS, CNN, ABC, and NBC all lied to you. New York Times, they all lied to you for political gain, power, because they didn't like Orange Man. Orange Man, bad. Got to get rid of him. And besides, we can use this to gain control over entire populations. People couldn't even go to the beach, couldn't even go outside in some places. You could be outside hundreds of feet away from anybody, and they'd come after you. Go back in your house. You're going to spread COVID. You don't need fresh air and sunshine and vitamin D, even though that's what you really needed. They lied. And now these same sickos want us to move on, forget, and grant amnesty for all the things they did. And I am convinced they knew exactly what they were doing when they did it. In recent weeks, we've shared some stories of people that died of the hospital protocols for COVID. Today, my guest is one of the rare survivors of those protocols. Her name is Mary Manders from Minnesota. Mary, I welcome you to Truth to Ponder, and I ask you now to share your story with this audience.
Thank you for having us on your program. First, I just wanted to say that I love the title of your program, Truth to Ponder. It really struck a chord with me and caught my attention because it's the truth that we're really trying to expose. In my case, the truth of what took place in hospitals around the country with the COVID hospital protocols. And I have to confess, I so much want to honor those who no longer have a voice. And while the memory of all these medical injustices continue to push further and further in the rearview mirror, and while the cover-ups continue to win battleground in legal wars trying to get around the emergency use authorization and determine the constitutionality of the PrEP Act, and even though I've really sought a lot of healing and solace and prayer in my faith, I still find it difficult, really, to open these doors and face what went on in the hospitals, the untold suffering and death. Speaking on this topic, you know, fills me with natural angst and apprehension, and sharing the personal details and circumstances where there was really only a fig leaf of hope is truly unsettling. But when you live through this, something like this, you become braver, you become more courageous, a person of conviction, and you're not just willing to sell out. And I told myself I need to step up and be brave in standing against the evil, driving out the darkness and spreading light. I need to overlook my personal weaknesses and know that through Christ, all things are possible. In the end, my only end game is that I truly am only interested in what I can do to serve God in truth. What are we here for if we're not here to serve Him? So this is my focus. I truly want the Lord to use me for His plans and not mine. And so that's why I'm here, trying to push forward and put aside the fact that my non-confrontational self feels uncomfortably awkward, you know, imposing what happened, my thoughts, because in the process, I hope to share the truth as well. I want to share the reasons for going radically against the mainstream narrative, to go against the Goliath medical establishment, where the expectation was to do no harm. Currently, I feel like there is a truth awakening happening, and I want to do my part to help others and make people aware, ultimately to stop the harm that is still happening out there.
So share exactly what happened to you. Apparently, if I understand it correctly, you were diagnosed or you tested positive for COVID. You ended up in the hospital. So tell the story, how it all began, how it transpired, and how it came out.
That's the million-dollar questions. I mean, it starts out really with, not in my wildest dreams did I think hospitals were not a place to go to heal and be given safe care at the most vulnerable time in my life. But I trusted them. But instead, my eyes were forced open. I found myself reevaluating. And my story begins with a little background. As an advocate of the unborn and the protection of all human life, I could not, in good conscience, receive the so-called vaccine, which are produced with live fetal cell lines and other harmful substances. So it was with firm religious conviction that I remained unvaccinated. First and foremost, that was my reason. Notwithstanding all of the scientific evidence of the ineffectiveness and the harm the vaccine inflicts. And so I began my journey as an unvaccinated 62-year-old female in excellent medical condition. I was a former college athlete who worked out nearly every day of my adult life. I was never seriously ill or on any medications. on January 7th of 2022. I was on day 8 of feeling ill with bone-crushing fatigue and weakness with flu symptoms. And I was brought to urgent care thinking I would get hydration through an IV. But instead, I was forced to take a COVID test, which, of course, came back positive.
Oh, they always do.
I was immediately told I was going to die. And like someone with leprosy, I was sequestered, isolated, and rushed urgently to a hospital by ambulance. Although my SpO2 blood oxygen levels were still in the low 90s. So I was definitely not near death. When I arrived at the hospital, they initially wouldn't admit me because my SpO2 levels were not low enough. But they also refused to let me go home.
Which also never made any sense to me. You have they want to wait till you get down to dangerous levels in the 80s on your blood oxygen count, and then in other words, come back when you're blue in the face and you're ready to die. Then maybe we will treat you. Made no sense at all.
It absolutely does not. But that I feel is part of the agenda. You know, they made me walk the hallways wearing a mask in attempts to lower my SpO2 levels enough for admission. And then once I was admitted, I knew enough at the time to refuse their attempts to give me remdesivir and put me on the ventilator. And when I asked, they refused to give me antivirals such as ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine.
Which ironically, hydroxychloroquine had been discovered by our own CDC back in 2003 and 2004, the first time SARS-CoV ever hit the United States. It did way back when. The recommended course of treatment, hydroxychloroquine. They found it to be extremely, that's their words, not mine, effective. What happened to medical science? And now you can't use what the CDC in all their research and studies said worked. Suddenly it's a pariah. You can't even say it. You can't even get it. You can't even prescribe it. It made no sense to me. This is what got me started on this path. In working in emergency management, finding this stuff, and then you watch them lie on the TV set, and they want me to lie for them? No way.
Right. It became about, you know, profiteering for money, basically, and driving people to the vaccine. And, all of that, all of those well-known tested drugs like hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, they suddenly became taboo. And, you know, even still today, it's hard to get them in hospitals.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, soon days passed, and even though the expectation was that I would go home in a couple of days, I was instead isolated to a COVID ward where I was heavily drugged with several different hard narcotics. I was tied down, was not allowed visits by anyone except the hospital chaplain. I was given minimal hydration and nutrition, to the point of being, this is written in my hospital medical chart, critically and severely dehydrated and malnourished. They seldom brought me food, and I was unable to feed myself because I was tied down and I was masked with high flow oxygen and too drugged with narcotics to do so. However, the dehydration and starvation recorded in my charts was blamed on me. It was written in the nursing reports as, quote, patient refuses. My husband would repeatedly call the hospital with requests for me to be given an IV, a nutritionist, a feeding tube, vitamins, antivirals, such as the ivermectin, anti-inflammatories, and antibiotics. All requests were rejected as being what they said, quote, unwarranted. Perhaps what is unusual about my story is that my husband could see through my online medical charts in real time every doctor and nurse report, every vital sign logged, every procedure performed, every test and scan result written, every drug administered during my hospital stay. Although he could see what was happening to me, he was helpless to do anything about it, and his concerns and requests were rejected every step of the way. Nobody was allowed into the hospital to see me for the first 28 days, not my husband, not my children, or anyone else, under threat of being arrested, not even our priests. I was drugged isolated and tied down with no one to advocate for me. The only lifeline and window as to what was happening to me, besides my husband's access to my online medical charts, were some angel hospital workers who would occasionally connect me to my husband by plugging in my cell phone so that he and my children were at intermittent periods able to get through on FaceTime on and off throughout my stay. Most of the time, though, my phone was unplugged and placed outside my reach. And by this point anyway, I was too weak even to lift my phone. So during this crucial, vulnerable time, instead of pursuing standard treatments alongside hydration and nutrition, anti-inflammatories, antibiotics, antivirals, the hospital instead administered even more narcotics because I had excruciating back pain from them physically and improperly forcing me into various what they called proning positions. Narcotics, by the way, which further suppress lung function. So within 2 weeks, my body weight plummeted from my normal weight of 117 pounds to 89 pounds, all while under hospital care due to minimal food and hydration because the hospital protocols demanded this. I mean, it doesn't take even a modicum of common sense to know that life cannot exist without hydration and nutrition. And yet the denial of this was part of the new unwritten protocols, which prior to COVID was not the normal standard care for anyone, let alone someone with pneumonia. So after 2 weeks of this mistreatment in the hospital, I was declared dead. I had kidney failure, liver failure, lung failure, septal infarction, heart attack, severe heart, tricuspid valve leakage, brachial branch, bundle blockage, stroke, massive blood clot, sepsis, virulent infections only contracted in hospitals, and really many other things. My once healthy body was driven to near death in just 2 short weeks under these COVID protocols. So, I mean, at this point, it was clear to my family that the only way I was going to be given a feeding tube and hydration was if I was ventilated, which up until that time, I had vehemently refused. However, by this time, my family had witnessed firsthand, through my medical charts, that going without food or hydration for so long had eventually, you know, shut down my organs, and I was in the groans of death. This began a heated power struggle with the hospital personnel because now the hospital refused even to ventilate me. And they told my family over the phone that I was really already dead and to just let it happen. At that point, my husband and children, which purely by divine providence happened to be on FaceTime with me at 2 a.m., requested, begged, and then finally demanded that the hospital take whatever measures were necessary to save my life, including ventilation, because just 2 short weeks ago, I was very healthy, 62-year-old, with absolutely no health issues. The doctors hung up on my family, and they were left with no response, hanging in the lurch without communication from the hospital. So my family remained in a panicked state of shock as to what had happened in those overnight hours, not knowing if I was dead or alive. And then finally, later that morning, they read in my online charts that the hospital had intubated and ventilated me, and I was connected to the ventilator, but probably would not survive. So that in a crux kind of is what was my situation. And so there were many other suspicious things that happened. I don't know how much you want me to go into it.
Whatever makes you comfortable. I mean, I think this audience for this radio program is familiar with a lot of these stories. And I want to make sure they get out there so we don't forget. Right now, what I worry about, there's a move afoot. Like, hey, we didn't know. Let's forgive and forget. Let's move on. No, let's not dwell in the past. They knew what they were doing in the past. Many doctors knew what they were doing was wrong, but they kept it. But too many medical practices have been bought up. Too many doctors were now owned by the hospitals, which are owned by corporations that own those hospitals and practices. And they were told, you either do as we tell you or you never work again. Or you may lose your license. And this is the threat that was out there consistently between government and corporate hospitals. And we see it now. Many doctors would tell you quietly, I don't believe what they're doing is right, but I am not given any choice. I either do this or I don't work. And I heard this story over and over again. So what was your turnaround? What brought you out of this and kept you alive?
Well, let me just back up a little bit. I agree with you wholeheartedly and what you said. They were threatened. The doctors were threatened, and you know they acted in lockstep in this whole thing. And I can't help but think they knew. It's always in the back of my mind. But many suspicious things happened to me during my hospital stay. But this particular night, the night I was intubated and put on the ventilator, seems to stand out as highly irregular behavior on part of the hospital personnel. It indicates they were motivated to reduce my oxygen levels enough to force ventilation, because that's the end game goal, right? To force ventilation, because they make money on this.
About $30,000, I think.
Right, or to just let me die, because they made money doing that as well. So in the 6 overnight hours prior to when I was put on the ventilator, the hospital staff suspiciously moved me out of intensive care and then into 3 different rooms for no reason. Later, they claimed it was so that I would receive better care, even though the nurse in the 3rd room was infuriated and screamed at me that she didn't have time to come into my room because she had about, quote, 10 other patients. So strangely enough, I went from 1-to-1 care in the ICU to 1-to-10 care that eerie night. And yet, that is what they said qualified as better care. But even more suspicious, each time I was moved to a different room that night, my SpO2 blood oxygen levels would drop significantly. And they continued to drop throughout the evening. This was witnessed by my husband, who constantly was viewing my online records and reading my vitals in real time. The drops in oxygen timed up so perfectly with each move that we've concluded they must have been turning down my oxygen supply as I arrived at each different room in an effort to absolutely require ventilation, because for the previous 2 weeks, my oxygen levels had been consistently stable. So while my husband was miraculously still connected with me over FaceTime that night, he questioned the nurse as to why my blood oxygen levels were dropping all of a sudden. She ignored my husband, but then my family witnessed the nurse scolding me, quote, if you want your oxygen levels up, then you just better get intubated. Because all along I was refusing. My husband and 3 of our adult children were all shocked to hear the nurse shouting this at me. Thankfully, they remained connected on a FaceTime call with me that entire evening. Again, looking back, this is suspicious evidence that their goal all along was intubation and ventilation. So many other things happened to me, but after 15 days of being on the ventilator, they removed it, and I was breathing on my own and thriving for 20 hours. Until they decided to intubate and ventilate me a second time for 6 additional days for a total of 21 days of intubation and ventilation. The official reason they gave for this second ventilation was fear of aspiration. Even though the respiratory therapist who had originally removed me from the ventilator and who was monitoring my progress only hours before had told my husband that he was shocked that the hospital had re-intubated me because I was doing so well. Again, just another sign of suspicious agendas being played out. But they also at that time performed several surgeries on me. A tracheostomy into my throat, a PEG feeding tube directly through my abdomen and into my stomach and intestines, and in a cage implanted into a vein in my abdomen to hold back the enormous blood clot which had formed due to not being given therapeutic levels of blood thinners. All of these procedures were performed dangerously late in terms of the help they were supposed to provide, which again was a hospital tactic. My husband noticed over and over. He would bring up certain test results, ask questions, pose alternative treatments that he had researched. Many were recommended by outside doctors and nurses he was continually consulting with, but the hospital would decline and overtly withhold well-known standard treatments of care. In hindsight, we could see the premeditated script of protocol-driven treatment instead of standard outcome treatment being played out, and the covert manipulation, which is apparent when you listen to story after story of these hospital narratives. Through all of this, I was continually shamed and shunned for not being vaccinated. It was the first thing listed at the top of my records, right after my name. They even scheduled me to be vaccinated under the threat of not not being admitted for therapy, which was a requirement to be completed before they would even release me from the hospital. However, after repeated attempts of them trying to talk to me and getting the so-called vaccine, I consistently refused and remain unvaccinated today.
My guest today is Mary Manders from Minnesota. And as you can tell, she's sharing her story, her nightmare, really, of what she went through from the medical establishment because of the CDC protocols put in place. Also with her, as we're doing this interview, is her husband, Michael, who I can only imagine, Michael, what you went through during this time of so many days not knowing. Your story, thankfully, has a positive ending. Many others, families that I've talked to in recent weeks on this program, their story is not so happy of an ending. A parent, a spouse, even young, dying because of what were, I think, misguided, insane, politically motivated protocols. And yet people today in the medical establishment try to pretend it really didn't happen, it wasn't that bad, and if it was, we just didn't know any better. So just forgive us. Forget all about it. Let's move on. That would be true if we really didn't know. The point is, I was around 4 years ago. I was in emergency management 4 years ago. I was watching the data come in. I was watching the press conferences. I was talking to people that knew more than I did. And I'm seeing a tremendous difference of opinions, but only one opinion was being permitted on Facebook, on the news media, anywhere. You were in lockstep, or you were crushed like a bug. I'm convinced that at minimum 80% of those that allegedly died of or with COVID should never have died. That's around 800,000 people here in the United States. Now listen, we got to go to a break right now. And when we get back, I'm going to share just a little bit of an update on what's happening in the world of shortwave, in the world of this radio program, and then we'll continue our interview with Mary Manders and her miraculous story of surviving the COVID-19 protocols. If you believe in this ministry, we need your support. I'll tell you how to support us on the other side of this break.
This is Truth to Ponder with Bob Bierman.
Flowers for the interrogator coming up. Shalom Aleichem. This is the nice Jewish boy, Jonathan Kahn, your Jewish connection, bringing you the riches of your Jewish roots in Jesus. Now get your pen out as fast as you can so you don't miss out on receiving a special free gift you're going to get in a moment. This is a true story, and firsthand, I know the person or the people of the story. There were two sisters, believers, who grew up in Eastern Europe under communism. They spread the gospel, and because of it, they were sentenced to prison, and they were regularly subjected to humiliation, torture. They were woken up, brought to the interrogator, and the interrogator said, "What were you dreaming about?" He's interrogating them about their dreams. And the woman answered, I dreamed I got out of prison and I went out and picked flowers and then brought them to you. And he responded, "You stupid cow, you'll never get out of prison. You bringing me flowers is as impossible as me handing out Bibles." Well, the sisters were ultimately released from prison. She went out, and the first thing that she did was go out, get flowers, and give them back to her interrogator. She did it. And he didn't know what to do. He was speechless. They ended up leaving their land, but then communism fell in the land. They returned, and they looked for their former interrogator, who had now fallen from his position. They came back to his house. He was now in fear, and they talked to him. And he revealed to them that he had Bibles, and someone had given him Bibles. And so he gave it to them to hand out to share the gospel, just like he said. So Messiah said, love your enemies, bless and pray for those who persecute you and use you. Love your enemies today. Bless those who are against you. Love your friends, love your strangers. If they can love that guy, you can love them. Bless, do the very thing that makes no sense in this world, because you have become a child of the Most High. So you have the power not to be conformed to this world, but to overcome this world with the power of Messiah, which is the power of love. Want more? Ask for the Sunrise Commandment on CD. Now, the free gift for you, the most incredible, awesome mystery of the temple doors with the hidden writings of the rabbis that talk about Jesus. Amazing stuff. The cherubim plus sapphires guaranteed to give you the power of living a victorious life in God. And the mystery of temple doors is on CD. It's yours free. How do you get these free? Easy. Just remember Yeshua, Jesus' real Hebrew name, and you dial it. That's it. So to receive your free gifts, just call 1-800-YESHUA-1. You will be blessed, but call now 1-800-YESHUA-1. Now, my friend, you're on this earth for a great purpose, to be a blessing. I invite you to join me in bringing the greatest blessings to the unreached peoples of the world, salvation throughout the earth through shortwave radio. It's amazing. Farthest way you could ever reach the gospel. How? Just call 1-800-YESHUA-1. That's YESHUA-1. Or you can write me direct. Here's how. Just write to the nice Jewish boy, box 1111, Lodi, L-O-D-I, New Jersey. The zip is 07644. That's the nice Jewish boy, box 1111, Lodi, New Jersey, 07644. Well, till next time, this is Jonathan Kahn saying, bless your enemy, my friend, in Messiah, Adon Olam, the Lord of all.
This is Truth to Ponder with Bob Bierman.
And I welcome you back to part two of Truth to Ponder for this Thursday, and I'm your host, Bob Bierman. My guest coming up in just a moment again, Mary Manders and her husband, Michael, as she shares her story of survival of the hospital protocols. And it was a close call. It's a story that needs to be told over and over again. Those that barely survived and the families that unnecessarily lost a loved one, or people's whose health is permanently damaged by these insane vaccines and protocols. Over the next couple of weeks, as we look at this radio program and finding direction, sure, we were founded on the COVID fraud and all the nonsense that permeated the entire thing. We've also looked at other issues of late. And once again, understand, I really believe that this radio program will still have its roots in some of these same original lies, but we need to expand that horizon because we are truly living in perilous times. And I believe too many people are just simply not ready. They think that everything's going to be just fine. They think we can fix it with politics alone. You can't. We do this radio program on International Shortwave. Many of your regular radio stations don't want to take a program like this. But there are millions of those radios around the United States and mega millions more around the world. And people really do listen to this radio program all over the United States, Canada, into Europe, United Kingdom. Many listen on the radio, either on WRMI or WTWW, and on the weekends from the Voice of Hope, covering virtually the entire continent of Africa. And we're also heard as a podcast. For us to stay functioning and on the radio, we need your financial support more now than we ever have before. I know the economy is difficult. I get it. Many of you have had to cut back on your giving, and you feel bad about it, but I understand it. I do. However, there are many of you that could, that just won't. And it is important. If you believe in what we are doing here at Truth to Ponder and want us to continue on WTWW in particular, I need to hear from you. You can visit our website, truth2ponder.com. truth2ponder.com. You can find out about the program, where to hear it, even podcast locations, and you can also support this radio broadcast using Give, Send, Go. The link is right there at the website. Or if you prefer, and many do, you can make a check or money order out to Ancient Word Radio. Ancient Word Radio, Post Office Box 510. Post Office Box 510. Chilhowie, Chilhowie. Chilhowie, Virginia. And the zip code in Chilhowie is 24319. That's 24319. Once again, you can either visit the website, truth2ponder.com, truth2ponder.com. Find out about the program, where to hear it, how to download it as a podcast, and also the mailing address is there as well. And if you decide to make a check or money order payable to the ministry, it's simply Ancient Word Radio, Post Office Box 510. Chilhowie, 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 Virginia, 24319. Now, my guest today, Mary Manders, along with her husband, Michael. And Mary, I want you to pick up where you left off in sharing your story of your time in the hospital with COVID-19.
I was finally discharged after 52 days in Regent's Hospital, and by the grace of God, the prayers of many, I miraculously survived, and I'm still miraculously recovering. I continue to undergo rigorous therapy and exercise sessions daily. My lungs are permanently scarred and damaged, most likely from the ventilator. Mm-hmm. So I also use a nebulizer to help me cough out lung secretions many times each day. So I'm told I must do this for the rest of my life. But the one thing I want to emphasize is that, first of all, I'm a miracle, and I praise God for that. But it was not COVID that took my life, but the hospital protocols, which kept me in isolation from my loved ones. They starved and dehydrated me, along with the hospital refusing to administer any antiviral medications or antibiotics. And yet the hospital acted in lockstep fashion and was paid handsomely every step of the way by our government, with incentives to maximize profits and motivating the continuation of these draconian measures. This is my story, my personal story, but it's really an unveiling of truth of medical mismanagement linked to COVID that is still happening today in hospitals around the country. And many questions remain, and unfortunately, critical answers are not given. We live in the United States of America, but it feels more like a totalitarian medical dictatorship. We need answers as to why people on their deathbeds are being denied access to life-saving basic treatments such as hydration and nutrition. Why does it seem that people who are supposed to be protecting us are pushing harmful drugs like remdesivir, inciting fear, and purposely trying to cover up and deny medicine that works in order to railroad us into mass vaccinations? Ivermectin has been proven to be the cure during all phases of this disease, yet it remains impossible to get in hospitals. The meta-analysis on ivermectin states that there are currently 81 studies, 61 of which are peer-reviewed. That's probably outdated now. There's probably more. And 33 randomly controlled trials proving its effectiveness. It's FDA-approved. It's been used safely around the world.
And that's, I'm glad you mentioned that, because for the longest time, the Food and Death Administration, that's my name for them now, they put out all these tweets on Twitter back in the days of Twitter before X, talking about stop doing it, you're not a horse, all this nonsense to diminish a award-winning, Nobel Prize-winning drug used in human beings for decades. And they tried to relegate it down to some kind of what they called horse paste or dewormer. Yet, and all the clueless clowns on the television, the talking heads at the major networks, CNN and, you know, MSNBC, all talking about an award-winning, proven, I mean proven beyond the shadow of a doubt, literally a miracle drug, and inexpensive, by the way, too. Ivermectin, been around for years, used for many things, and yes, it was approved for people decades ago. They're trying to make you believe it was never approved for people, so they were lying. The corporate media lied along with our government, and this is what angers me to what can, I mean, finish your story, and I hope that you're taking action against these this hospital that did this to you. I pray that you are.
Right. So, you're absolutely right. You hit the nail on the head. I mean, it's inexpensive and widely available, and there's far more science behind it than any other drug for COVID.
There's more science behind it than the vaccine.
Oh, absolutely. There's not a lot of science at all behind that. Yeah, the hospital refused to dispense it, and it remains politically taboo. And the mainstream media is misleading people into thinking it isn't safe for humans and that it's ineffective. I could no longer remain silent and therefore chose to follow the Lord's call to participate, to be a participant in fighting for a reliable, proper treatment that our government agencies seem to be suppressing, and unveil the truth of medical mismanagement that is still happening today in hospitals around the country. My prayer is that each time someone sheds light on this darkness, and with each ripple of truth exposed, justice can be exacted and this tyranny and madness can end. Because my heart truly aches and goes out to those who have suffered and have died, have died from these deadly hospital protocols. I mean, if you look at the statistics, most people died in hospitals with this disease. And
exactly.
It's very telling.
And the other place, nursing homes.
Or nursing homes, right. Yeah, so, that's my story. I'm grateful to God for sparing my life, but I also want to be a voice for those who are no longer here to tell their story. And may He be glorified through all of the suffering. I'm thankful to my husband for fighting for me every step of the way.
Amen.
For the many who lifted me up in prayer, it was constant. For all the hospital workers who had the courage to refuse to go along with the protocols, getting to your last question about we're part of a group called COVID Justice Minnesota. For being, you know, the real heroes. They're bringing to light all of these stories, and I'm just one of many advocating for the truth, providing support for families who have lived through the horrific abuse and trauma and loss of these injustices by the medical establishment. So, yes, there are lawsuits pending. They're pursuing, because of statute of limitations, they're pursuing cases where the people have died first. Mm-hmm. I'm a survivor, so it's a little bit different case. But we just pray that through all of it, some good can come out of it. And the greatest good is that, you know, they can stop doing this in hospitals.
The one thing I've learned in doing some interviews, now I've been dealing with a lot of people in Minnesota because of the activity of the organization in which you're involved with, but this is not just limited to Minnesota. These kind of things are happening all over the United States. And I do know from other interviews that I've done, if anybody, you may live in Mississippi, you may live in Georgia, you may live in California, you may live who knows where. Even if you contact the folks in Minnesota, they seem to know where everybody else is located. Can you tell us about the organization that you are promoting? And I mean, I've dealt with people that have lost loved ones, and they're fighting for medical justice in Minnesota, but they're fighting for it elsewhere. How do they find out more about this particular organization?
This is Mary's husband, Mike. Mm-hmm. We have a website for COVID Justice Minnesota, and it's spelled out just that way, COVID Justice MN for Minnesota.com. We also have a Facebook page with the same name, COVID Justice Minnesota. There are some materials there, and obviously there are some stories of some people, but you can contact various people within the organization. There's an intake coordinator, and that's probably the first point of contact. And then there are attorneys that are working with COVID Justice Minnesota, paralegals, and nurses that are going through these hospital records.
To document the cases. They have to be documented.
Yes, because these hospital records, sometimes they're 4,000 or 5,000 pages long. And it's really, really overwhelming for someone to go through and to really understand all of it, frankly. So they're a great help there. It's, and they can refer people. People, if you're from a different state, feel free to contact COVID Justice Minnesota, and they can refer you, to an organization that may be in your state or somebody else. They'll help you is what I'm trying to say.
I personally, Mike and I want no monetary benefit. We only want this evil to stop. And I think we always need to be in a state of discernment and wisdom and understanding to fully understand how we got here. Because quite honestly, it's been in the making for many years. It's hidden behind the scenes and only apparent to those very close to creating and implementing the agenda. But it's becoming more and more prevalent every day, and
people are waking
up and seeking answers. I mean, when a country begins to outwardly euthanize, abort, and mutilate its people, you have to think and discern that this system is more about death than life. It seems hospitals have now crossed that line, too, and are now more concerned in the business of making money than of true healing. One just has to dig no further than the amounts paid for implementing the COVID protocol.
The Bible is so clear. The love, not money, but the love of money is the root of all evil. And there has been so much money dangled out to hospitals for COVID-related things, so to speak, that I've watched from the time that I walked away from emergency management in 2020, watching what hospitals were being demanded to do, watching how all these so-called overwhelmed hospitals were empty back in 2020, and all these nurses had time to coordinate dance routines on TikTok and Facebook, and I had to wonder, something is not right with this story we're being told. They're not being overwhelmed.
Right.
They're not being overrun. Mortuaries are not being overrun. They just have no place. They couldn't do any funerals. They were stuck, unable to do funerals, and they had backed up funerals. That was the issue. And we find out the number of people that died in 2020 was not that excessive at all. But I think many died unnecessarily, especially even into 2021 and 2022. These protocols were death warrants. They were just death warrants. I
mean, just look at the incentives. If you were diagnosed with COVID, they got payment. If you were admitted under the title of COVID, they got payment. If they were administered remdesivir, they got payment. If you were sent to the ICU, they got payment. If you were put on a ventilator, they got payment. If you went to the coroner, they got, you know, if you actually died, they got payment.
They got a bonus.
They literally got
a bonus if you died.
Yeah, right? In Minnesota here, along with the hospital being able to collect insurance money, obviously they got paid for their quote-unquote services, they also received government bonuses, and different states had varying amounts that were allowed. Minnesota was allowed up to $383,000 per patient, per COVID patient, if they followed these protocols.
And we wonder how we end up being in debt another $1 trillion every 90 days. You know, it's because of this kind of insane spending. A country that is running on debt.
Exactly. I just wanted to also add that, you know, certain populations of people are being targeted. I mean, so when Christians, when unvaccinated, when the aged, the disabled, are not only expendable, but targeted. And hospitals are given immunity from prosecution and can legally, I know, in at least one state, impose DNR, do not resuscitate. Without accountability, we know we are in trouble. And that is happening. Like I say, the agenda goes way back many years. There's a depopulation. There's a eugenics. There's this indoctrination of children. There's the absence of God. It's a Marxist and communistic ideology that is, you know, played out very easily in this scenario. You know, according to a survey given to college professors, and by their own admission, over 50% of college professors label themselves Marxists. You know, it's not a good sign for our country.
Is there any last thought you need to share with our audience?
What I wanted to say is, in closing, I just wanted to leave a message that has carried me through some of the dark times, and it is this. I believe that things happen for a reason, and nothing that has happened is outside the providence of God and His holy will. So I will always be grateful to God, because it is in this suffering where we meet Jesus on the cross and we can glorify Him. So we can always look to assurance from God. He says, do not be afraid. He goes with us and before us, and He will never abandon those who trust in Him. Because He has said from Jeremiah, For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you and not harm you, plans to give you hope and a future. So with man, this is possible, impossible, but with God, all things are possible.
Well, my guest today, Mary Manders, along with her husband, Michael, and Mary has been sharing her story with this audience, how she survived the hospital protocols. We shared on recent programs. By the way, Mary, thank you so much for being here today. Your story, I know, is inspiring to many that needed to hear this. Sadly, many people that went to the hospital never came home. Many people died unnecessarily because of these protocols, in lonely hospital rooms away from family, in nursing homes, in loneliness and fear. And for what? How many doctors' careers were destroyed? Real doctors with real protocols that worked, and they were the ones that were silenced. Right now, there's this idea that keeps creeping out of the New York Times, MSNBC, and other places. Well, maybe we made some mistakes. No, you willfully shut down conversation and debate and discussion about any of it. You had a one-size-fits-all narrative that was obvious from the beginning, not working. But you demanded absolute and total compliance. No, we cannot just forget. There are consequences when you do evil things. Evildoers must face the consequences of their evil deeds and actions. And too many things were done in the name of COVID for politics, power, globalism, control, and just sheer stupidity. With willing partners in the media, sold out scientists that would fake any data you wanted, tell you whatever you wanted to hear. No, we cannot simply just forget. Mary's one of the lucky ones. Last week, we shared stories of those that were not so lucky. There are many things we face in this world, and that's why we do this radio program. I'm going to ask you again. We have a lot of topics to be covering over the next 2 weeks. If you believe in this ministry staying on shortwave, I need to hear from you today. You can visit the website, truth2ponder.com. You can support us from the website or make a check or money order payable to Ancient Word Radio. Ancient Word Radio, Post Office Box 510. Post Office Box 510. Chilhowie, Chilhowie. Chilhowie, Virginia 24319, Ancient Word Radio, Post Office Box 510, Chilhowie, Virginia 24319.
This has been Truth to Ponder with Bob Bierman. To find out more, visit our website, truth2ponder.com. That's truth2ponder.com. Truth to Ponder, shining the light of truth in a darkening world.